Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Dermis, a 12th hour apostolic Sabbath time congregation on Zion at the 12th hour in Elgin, Texas. Today is October the 4th, 2025, or it's the 14th day of Tishri, 29. We're going to start our second service for this Sabbath day, entitled Apostasy at the Jordan, chapter 41 of Patriarchs and Prophets by Ellen G. White. Okay, Apostasy at the Jordan, chapter 41, Patriarchs and Prophets, based on Numbers 25, with a joyful heart and renewed faith in the Yahweh, the victorious armies of the Israel had returned from Bashan. For they had already gained possession of a valuable territory, and they were confident of the immediate conquest of Canaan. Only the River Jordan lay between them and the Promised Land. Just across the river was a rich plain covered with the verdure, watered with the streams from the copious fountains and shaded by the luxuriant palm trees. On the western border of the plain rose the towers and palaces of the Jericho, so embosomed in its palm tree growth that it was called a city of palm trees. On the eastern side of the Jordan, between the river and the high tableland, which they had been traversing, was also a plain, several miles in the width, and extending some distance along the river, for this sheltered valley had the climate of the tropics. Here flourished the shittim, or the acacia tree, giving to the plain the name Valley of Shittim, for it was here that the Israelites encamped, and in the acacia grove by the riverside they found an agreeable retreat. But amid these attractive surroundings, they were to encounter an evil more deadly than the mighty host of the armed men are the wild beasts of the wilderness. That country, so rich in the natural advantages, had been defiled by the inhabitants in the public worship of the Baal, the leading deity, as the most degrading and iniquitous scenes were constantly enacted on every side, where places noted for were the places noted for idolatry and licentiousness, for the very names being suggested of the vileness and corruption of the people. These surroundings exerted a polluting influence upon the Israelites, for their minds became familiar with the vile thoughts constantly suggested, for their life of the ease and inaction produced its demoralizing effect and almost unconsciously unto themselves they were departing from Yahweh and coming into a condition where they would fall an easy prey to temptation. During the time of their encampment besides Jordan, Moses was preparing for the occupation of Canaan. In this work, the great leader was fully employed. But unto the people, this time of the suspense and expectation was most trying. And before many weeks had elapsed, their history was marred by the most frightful departures from the virtue and integrity. At first, there was little intercourse between the Israelites and their heathen neighbors. But after a time, the Midianite women began to steal into the camp. But their appearance excited no alarm, and so quietly were their plans conducted that the attention of Moses was not called to the matter. It was the object of these women and their association with the Hebrews to seduce them into the transgression of the law of the Yahweh, to draw their attention unto the heathen rites and customs, and lead them into idolatry. These motives were studiously concealed under the garb of friendship, so that they were not suspected even by the guardians of the temple. At Balaam's suggestion, a grand festival in the honor of their gods was appointed by the king of Moab, and it was secretly arranged that Balaam should induce the Israelites to attend. He was regarded by them as a prophet of Yahweh, and hence had little difficulty in accomplishing his purpose. Great numbers of the people joined him in witnessing the festivities. They ventured upon the forbidden ground and were entangled in the snare of Satan, beguiled with the music and dancing, and allured by the beauty of the heathen vestals. They cast off the fealty to Yahweh as they united in the mirth and feasting, indulging in the wine, they crowded their senses and broke down the barriers of self-control. Passion had full sway, and having defiled their consciences by the lewdness, they were persuaded to bow down to the idols. For they offered sacrifice upon the heathen altars and participated in the most degrading rites. It was not long before the poison had spread like a deadly infection to the camp of Israel. Those who would have conquered their enemies in the battle were overcome by the wiles of the heathen women. For the people seemed to be infatuated, for the rulers and the leading men were among the first to transgress, and so many of the people were guilty that their apostasy became national. Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor. Baal Peor, when Moses was aroused to perceive the evil, the plots of their enemies had been so successful that not only were the Israelites participating in the licentious worship at the Mount Peor, but the heathen rites were coming to be observed in the camp of Israel, where the age leader was filled with the indignation and the wrath of Yahweh was kindled. For their iniquitous practices did not for Israel, and did that for the Israel, which, let's read that again. For their iniquitous practices did that for the Israel, which all the enchantments of Balaam could not do. They separated them from Yahweh by the swift coming judgments. The people were awakened to the enormity of their sin. A terrible pestilence broke out in the camp, under which tens of thousands speedily fell a prey. Yahweh commanded that the leaders in this apostasy be put to death by the magistrates. This order was promptly obeyed, for the offenders were slain. Then their bodies were hung up in sight of all Israel, that the congregation, seeing the leaders so severely dealt with, might have a deep sense of Yahweh's abhorrence of their sin and the terror of his wrath against them. All felt that the punishment was just, and the people hastened to the tabernacle and with tears and deep humiliation confessed their sin while they were thus weeping before Yahweh at the door of the tabernacle while the plague was still doing its work of death and the magistrates were executing their terrible commission. And Zimri, one of the nobles of Israel, came boldly into the camp accompanied by a Midianitish harlot, a princess of his chief house in Midian, whom he escorted to his tent. Never was vice bolder or more stubborn in flame. With the wine, Zimri declared his sin as solemn and gloried in his shame, for the priests and leaders had prostrated themselves in the grief and humiliation, weeping between the porch and the altar, and entreating the Yahweh to spare his people and give not his heritage to reproach. When this prince in Israel flaunted his sin in the sight of the congregation, as if to defy the vengeance of Yahweh and mock the judges of the nation. Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, which Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the high priest, rose up from among the congregation, and seizing a javelin, he went after the man of Israel into the tent and slew them both. Thus the plague was stayed, while the priest who had executed the divine judgment was honored before all Israel, and the priesthood was confirmed unto him and to his house forever. For the Phinehas had turned my wrath away from the children of Israel, was a divine message. Wherefore say, behold, I give unto him my covenant of peace, and he shall have it, and his seed after him, even the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his Yahweh and made an atonement for the children of Israel. For the judgments visited upon Israel for their sin at Shittim destroyed the survivors of that vast company who nearly 40 years before had incurred the sentence, they shall surely die in the wilderness, for the numbering of the people by the divine direction during their enchantment on the plains of the Jordan showed that of them whom Moses and Aaron the priest numbered, when they numbered the children of Israel in the wilderness of Sinai, there was not left a man of them save Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun, Numbers 26:64-5. You ain't never going to change, are you?
I didn't know that was sitting there.
You ain't never going to change. You ain't never going to change. You're just going to keep fumbling and fumbling and fumbling and making noise and distortions and racket while we're trying to do sermons. And just destroying my head. Just destroyed my head. And just lost where I was at and what I was doing. You old fumbling around. You won't get settled down. The damned old feebleness. God damn it. Damn. You ain't never going to change that. Frying my brain. Either in the kitchen or there, it don't make no difference where. You're going to make a big bang. Oh, man. That's horrible. I can't hardly bear it anymore. I don't even know where I left off at. Boy, you just ruined us. You just ruined us. Damn. Felt like a shotgun blast going off. Just fumbling, fiddling around. Just people fumbled around. That'll just destroy my spirit. Let's do that paragraph over. I don't know where in the heck I'm at. I'm trying to bang another one. Let's do that paragraph over. For the Yahweh has sent judgments upon Israel for the yielding to the enticement of the Midianites. But the tempters were not to escape the wrath of the divine justice. For the Amalekites who had attacked Israel and Rephidim, falling upon those who were faint and weary behind the host, were not punished till long after. But the Midianites, who seduced them into sin, were speedily made to feel Yahweh's judgment as being the most dangerous enemies. Avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites, Numbers 31:2, was the command of the Yahweh to Moses. Afterwards shalt thou be gathered unto thy people. This mandate was immediately obeyed. 1,000 men were chosen from each of the tribes and sent out with the leadership of the Phinehas, and they warred against the Midianites, as the Yahweh commanded Moses. And they slew the kings of Midian, beside the rest of them that were slain. 5 kings of Midian, Balaam also the son of Beor, they slew with the sword. Verses 7-8. For the women also, who had been made captives by the attacking army, were put to death at the command of Moses, as the most guilty and the most dangerous of the foes of Israel. Such was the end of them that devised mischief against the Yahweh's people, says the psalmist. The heathen are sunk down in the pit that they made, and the net which they hid is their own foot taken. Psalms 9:15. For the Yahweh will not cast off his people, neither will he forsake his inheritance, but judgment shall return unto righteousness when men gather themselves together against the soul of the righteous. The Yahweh shall bring upon them their own iniquity and shall cut them off in their own wickedness. Psalms 94:14-15, 21-23. When Balaam was called to curse the Hebrews, he could not by all his enchantments bring evil upon them, for the Yahweh had not beheld iniquity in Jacob, neither had he seen perverseness in Israel. Numbers 23:21-23. But when through yielding unto the temptation, they transgressed Yahweh's law, their defense departed from them. When the people of Yahweh are faithful to his commandments, there is no enchantment against Jacob, neither is there any divination against Israel. Hence all the power and wily arts of the Satan are exerted for the seducing them into sin. If those who profess to be the dispositories of the Yahweh's law become transgressors of his precepts, they separate themselves from Yahweh, and they will be unable to stand before their enemies. For the Israelites, who could not be overcome by the arms or by the enchantments of Midian, fell a prey to her harlots. Such is the power that women enlisted in the service of Satan has exerted to entrap and destroy souls. She has chased down many wounded, yea, many strong men have been slain by her. Proverbs 7:26. It was thus that the children of Seth were seduced from their integrity, and the holy seed became corrupt. It was thus that Joseph was tempted. Thus Samson betrayed his strength, the defense of Israel, into the hands of the Philistines. Here David stumbled, and Solomon, the wisest of the kings, who had thrice been called the beloved of his father, became a slave of passion and sacrificed his integrity to the same bewitching power. Now all these things happened unto them for an example, and they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. 1 Corinthians 10:11-12. Satan well knows the material with which he has to deal and the human heart. He knows, for he has studied with the finished intensity for the thousands of years, for the point's most easy assail in every character and through the successive generations. He has wrought to overthrow the strongest men, princes, in Israel, by the same temptation that was so successful at Baal Peor. All along through the ages, there are strewn wrecks of the character that have been stranded upon the rocks of the sensual indulging. As we approach the close of the time, as the people of Yahweh stand upon the borders of the heavenly Canaan, Satan will, as of old, redouble his efforts to prevent them from entering the goodly land. For he lays his snares for every soul. It is not the ignorant and the uncultured merely that need to be guarded. He will prepare his temptations for those in the highest position, in the most holy office. If he can lead them to pollute their souls, he can through them destroy many. And he employed the same agents now as he employed 3,000 years ago, by the worldly friendships, by the charms of the beauty, by the pleasure-seeking mirth, feasting, or the wine cup. He tempts to the violation of the seventh commandment. Satan seduced Israel into licentiousness before leading them into idolatry. Those who will dishonor Yahweh's image and defile his temple in their own person will not scruple at any dishonor to Yahweh that will gratify the desire of the depraved heart. Sensual indulgence weakens the mind and debases the soul, for the moral and intellectual powers are benumbed and paralyzed by the gratification of the animal propensities, and it is impossible for the slave of the passion to realize the sacred obligation of the law of Yahweh, to appreciate the atonement, or to place the right value upon the soul, goodness, purity, and truth, reverence for Yahweh, and love for the sacred things, all those holy affections and noble desires that make men that the heavenly world are concerned in the fires of lust. For the soul becomes a blackened and desolate waste, the habitation of the evil spirit, and the stage of every unclean and hateful bird. Beings formed in the image of Yahweh are dragged down to a level with the brute. It was by association with the idolaters, and joining in their festivities, that the Hebrews were led to transgress Yahweh's law and bring his judgment upon the nation. So now it is by leading the followers of the Asher to associate with the unrighteous and unite in their amusement, that Satan is most successful and will learn them into sin. Come out, Among them, and be ye separate, says the other, and touch no unclean. Touch not the unclean. 2 Corinthians 6:17. For the order requires the people, now as great as distinctions in the world, and custom, habits, and principles, as he required of Israel anciently. If they faithfully follow the teachings of his word, this distinction will exist. It cannot be otherwise. The warning given unto the Hebrews against assimilating with the heathen were not more direct or explicit than are those forbidding a Christian to conform to the spirit and customs of the ungodly Catholic Church, which is false doctrine of the three and one persons of the Godhead that has overtaken all Christendom, including the Seventh Day Adventists. For Yahshua speaks unto them, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. Any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. 1 John 3:15. For the friendship of the world is enmity with Yahweh. Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is the enemy of Yahweh. James 4:4. For the followers of Yahshua are to separate themselves from sinners, choosing their society only when there is opportunity to do them good. We cannot be too decided in assuring the coming of those who exert an influence to draw us away from Yahweh. While we pray, lead us not into temptation. We are to shun temptation so far as possible. It was when the Israelites were in a condition of outward ease, E-A-S-E, and security that they were led into sin. They failed to keep Yahweh ever before them. They neglected prayer and cherished a spirit of self-confidence, ease, and self-indulgence, left the cynical of the soul unguarded, and the evasion thoughts found empty. It was a traitor within the walls that overthrew the stronghold of principle and betrayed Israel into the power of Satan. It is thus that Satan still seeks to compass the ruin of the soul. A long preparatory process, unknown to the world, goes on in the heart before the Christian commits open sin. For the mind does not come down at once from purity and holiness to depravity, corruption, and crime. It takes time to degrade those born in the image of Yahweh to the brutal or the satanic. By the beholding, we become changed. By the indulging of the impure thoughts, man can so educate his mind that sin, which he once loathed, will become pleasant to him. Satan is using every means to make crime and debasing vice popular. We cannot walk the streets of our cities without encountering a flurrying notices of crime presented in some novel, or to be acted at some theater. For the mind is educated to familiarity with sin. The course pursued by the base and vile is set before the people and the periodicals of the day, and everything that can excite passion is brought before them, and the exciting stories they hear and read so much of the debasing crime that once tender conscience, which would have recoiled with horror from such scene, becomes hardened, and they dwell upon these things with a greedy interest. Many of the amusements popular in the world today, even with those who claim to be Christian, tend to the same end as did those of the heathen. There are indeed few among them that Satan does not harm, and does not turn to account in destroying souls. Through the drama, he has worked for the ages to excite passion and glorify vice. For the opera, with its fascinating display and bewildering music, the masquerade, the dance, the card table, Satan employs to break down the barrier of the principle and open the door to the sensual indulgence. At every gathering for pleasure where pride is fostered, or appetite indulged, where one is led to forget Yahweh and lose sight of the eternal interest, there Satan is hiding his claims, binding his claims about the soul. Keep thy heart with all diligence is the counsel of the wise man, for out of it are the issues of life, Proverbs 4:23. As man thinketh in his heart, so is he, Proverbs 23:7. For the heart must be renewed by the divine grace, or it will be in vain to seek for purity of life. He who attempts to build up a noble, a virtuous character, independent of the grace of Yahshua, is building his house upon the shifting sand. In the fierce storms of the temptation, it will surely be overthrown. For the David's prayer should be the petition of every soul. Create in me a clean heart, O Yahweh, and renew a right spirit within me. Psalms 51:10. And having become partakers of the heavenly gift, we are to go on unto the perfection, being checked by the power of Yahweh through the faith, 1 Peter 1:5. Yet we have a work to do to resist temptation. Those who would not fall a prey to Satan's devices must guard well the avenues of the soul. They must avoid leading, seeing, or hearing that which will suggest impure thoughts. The mind should not be left to wander at the random upon every subject that the adversary of the soul may suggest. Girding up the loins of your mind, says the Apostle Peter, be sober, not fashioning yourselves according unto your former lust and your ignorance, but like as he which called you is holy, be ye yourselves also holy in all manner of living. For the Bible, I thought, said in all manner of conversation. Maybe that is in another place. 1 Peter 1:13-15. Oh, yeah, that's the RV. So there. Says Paul, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of the good report, if there be any virtue and if there be any praise, think on these things, Philippians 4:8. For this will require earnest prayer and unceasing watchfulness. We must be aided by the abiding influence of the Holy Spirit, which will attract the mind upward and habitate it to dwell on the pure and holy things. And we must give diligent study to the word of Yahweh. Wherewithal shall a young man cleanse his way? By the taking heed thereunto according unto thy word. Thy word says the promise have I hid in thine heart, that I might not sin against thee. Psalms 119:9-11. Israel sinned at Beth Peor, but brought the judgments of Yahweh upon the nation. And though the same sins may not now be punished as speedily, they will as surely meet retribution. For if any man defile the temple of Yahweh, him shall Yahweh destroy it. 1 Corinthians 3:17. Nature has a fixed terrible penalty under these crimes. Penalties which sooner or later will be inflicted upon every transgressor. It is these sins more than any other that have caused a fearful degeneracy of our race, and the weight of the disease and misery with which the world is cursed. Men may succeed in concealing their transgression from their fellow men, but they will no less surely reap the result in the suffering, disease, imbecility, or death. And beyond this, life stands the tribunal of the judgment, with its award of the eternal penalties. They which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of Yahweh. But with Satan and evil angels shall have their part in that lake of the fire, which is the second death. Galatians 5:21, Revelation 20:14. For the lips of a strange woman drop as an honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood. Sharp as a two-edged sword, Proverbs 5:3-4. Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy ears unto the cruel, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger, and thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed. Verses 8-11. Her house inclineth unto death. None that goes unto her return again. Proverbs 2:18-19. Her guests are in the depths of hell. Proverbs 9:18. That's the end of chapter 41. We now have chapter 42. It will be part two of this sermon, of chapter 41. It's entitled, The Law Repeated. This chapter is based on Deuteronomy 4, to 6, and verse 20 and 28. Chapter 28, it says, for the Yahweh announced unto Moses that the appointed time for the possession of the kingdom was at hand. And as the aged prophet stood upon the heights overlooking the river Jordan and the promised land, he gazed with a deep interest upon the inheritance of his people. Would it be possible that the sentence pronounced against him for his sin at Kadesh might be revoked? With a deep earnestness, he pleaded of the Yahweh, Thou hast begun to show thy servant thy greatness and thy mighty hand, for what Yahweh is there in heaven or in earth that can do according unto thy works and according unto thy might? I pray thee, let me go over and see the good land that is beyond Jordan, that goodly mountain in Lebanon, Deuteronomy 3:24-27. For the answer was, let it suffice thee, speak no more unto me of this matter. Get thee up into the top of Pisgah and lift up thine eyes westward and northward and southward and eastward, and behold it with thine eyes, for thou shalt not go over this Jordan. Without a murmur, Moses submitted to the decree of Yahweh, and now his great anxiety was for Israel. Who would feel the interest for their welfare that he had felt? From a full heart, he poured forth the prayer, let the Yahweh of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over their congregation, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Yahweh be not as sheep which have no shepherd. Numbers 27:16-17. For Yahweh hearkened unto the prayer of his servant, and the answer came, take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay thine hand upon him, and set him before Eleazar, the priest, and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. And thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him, that all the congregation of the people of Israel may be obedient. Verses 18-20. For the Joshua had long attended Moses, and being a man of wisdom, ability, and faith, he was chosen to succeed him. Through the laying on of the hands by Moses, accompanied by a most impressive charge, Joshua was solemnly set apart as the leader of Israel. He was also admitted unto a present share in the government, for the words of Yahweh concerning Joshua came through Moses to the congregation. He shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall ask counsel for him after the judgment of the Urim before the Yahweh. At his word shall they go out, and at his word they shall come in. Both he and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation, verses 21-23, before relinquishing his position as a visible leader of Israel, Moses was directed to rehearse unto them the history of their deliverance from Egypt and their journey in the wilderness, and also to recapitulate the law spoken from the Sinai. When the law was given, but few of the present congregation were old enough to comprehend the awful solemnity of the occasion, as they were soon to pass over the Jordan and take possession of the promised land. Yahweh would present before them the claim of his law and enjoin upon them obedience as a condition of their prosperity. Moses stood before the people to repeat his last warning and admonition. His face was illuminated with a holy light. His hair was white with the age, but his form was erect. His countenance expressed the unabated vigor of health, and his eye was clear and undimmed. It was an important occasion, and with deep feeling, he portrayed the love and mercy of your almighty protector, and now of the days that are past, which were before thee, since the day that Yahweh created man upon the earth, and asked from the one side of heaven unto the other, whether there has been any such thing as this great thing is, or has been heard like it. Did every people hear the voice of Yahweh speaking out of the midst of the fire, as those has heard and lived, or hath Yahweh said to go and take him a nation from the midst of another nation by the temptation, by the sign, and by the wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by a stretched out arm, and by a great terror, according to all that the Yahweh, your Yahweh, did for you in Egypt before your eyes. Unto thee it was showed, that thou mightest know that the Yahweh is the Yahweh, there is none else beside him. For the Yahweh did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any other, for you were the fewest of all people. But because Yahweh loved you, and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your father, hath the Yahweh brought you out with a mighty hand, and redeemed you out of the house of bondage from the hand of the Pharaoh king of Egypt. Know therefore that Yahweh, thy Yahweh, he is Yahweh, the faithful Yahweh, which keepeth covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandment unto a thousand generations. Deuteronomy 7:7-9. For the people of Israel had been ready to ascribe their troubles to Moses, but now their suspicion that he was controlled by the pride, ambition, or selfishness were removed, and they listened with the confidence to his word. Moses faithfully set before them their error and the transgressions of their fathers. They had often felt impatient and rebellious because of their long wandering in the wilderness. But the Yahweh had not been chargeable with this delay in the possessing Canaan. He was more grieved than they because he could not bring them into the immediate possession of the promised land. And thus displayed before all nations his mighty power and the deliverance of his people, with the distrust of Yahweh, with their pride and unbelief, they had not been prepared to enter Canaan. They would in no way represent that people whose Yahweh is the Yahweh, for they did not bear his character of the purity, goodness, and benevolence as their fathers yielded, and their faith unto the direction of the Yahweh, being governed by his judgment and walking in his ordinances, they would long before have been settled in a Canaan, a prosperous, holy, happy people. Their delay to enter the goodly land dishonored Yahweh and distracted from his glory and the sight of the surrounding nations. Moses, who understood the character and value of the law of Yahweh, assured the people that no other nation has such wise, righteous, and merciful rules as have been given to the Hebrews. Behold, he said, I have taught you statutes and judgments, even as Yahweh, my Yahweh, commanded me, that you should do so in the land whether you go to possess. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the nation, which shall hear all these testings and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For Moses called their attention unto the day that thou stoodest before the Yahweh, our Yahweh and Hor. And he charged the Hebrew host, what nation is this so great who has Yahweh so nigh unto them? As Yahweh, our Yahweh, is in all things that we call upon him for. And what nation is this so great that has tested the judges, so righteous is all this law, which I set before you this day? Today, the challenge in Israel might be repeated, for the law that Yahweh gave his ancient people were wiser, better, and more humane than those in the most civilized nations of the earth. For the laws of the nations there marks of the infirmity and passion of the unrenewed heart, but Yahweh's law bears the stamp of the divine. So Yahweh has taken you and brought you forth out of the unfurnished, declared Moses, to be unto him a people of inheritance, a land which they were soon to enter, and which was to be theirs, on condition of obedience to the law of Yahweh, was thus described to them, and how much of these words have moved the hearts of Israel, as they remembered that he who so glowingly pictured the blessing of the goodly land had been through their sin shut out from sharing the inheritance of his people. For the Yahweh thy Yahweh bringeth thee into a good land, not as the land of Egypt from which you came out, where thou sowedest thy seed and waterest it with thy foot as a garden of earth, but the land where you go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven, a land of the brooks of the water, of fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and hills, a land of the wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of the all olives and honey, a land wherein there shall eat bread without scarceness, thou shalt not lack anything in it. A land whose stones are iron and out of whose hills thou mayest be bread. Thou mayest dig bread. Let's read that next. And out of whose hills thou mayest dig bread. A land which Yahweh thy Yahweh cares for the eyes of Yahweh thy Yahweh are always upon it, from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. Deuteronomy 8, 7, 9, 11, 10, and 12. And it shall be when the Yahweh thy Savior or Father shall have brought thee into the land which he sware unto thy fathers, unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give thee great and goodly cities, which thou be a buildest not, and houses full of all great things, which thou buildest not, and wells digged, which thou diggest not, vineyards, and olive trees which thou plantest not, when thou shalt have eaten and be full, then beware lest thou forget the Yahweh. Take heed unto yourself, lest you forget the covenant of the Yahweh. For the Yahweh, thy Creator is a consuming fire, even a jealous Yahweh, if they should do evil in the sight of Yahweh. Then said Moses, you shall soon utterly perish from off the land, for until you go over Jordan to possess it. After the public rehearsal of the law, Moses completed the work of writing all the laws, the statutes, and the judgments which Yahweh had given him, and all the regulations concerning the sacrificial system. For the book containing these was placed in charge of the proper officers, and was the safekeeping deposited in the side of the ark. Still, the great leader was filled with the fear that the people would depart from Yahweh, and a most sublime and thrilling address, he set before them the blessing that would be theirs on condition of obedience, and the curses that would follow upon the transgression. If thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of Yahweh, thou Yahweh to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command thee this day, blessed shalt thou be in the city, and blessed shalt thou be in the field, and the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of thy ground, and the fruit of thy cattle. Blessed shall be thy basket and thy store. Blessed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and blessed shalt thou be when thou goest out. For Yahweh shall cause thine enemies that rise up against thee to be smitten before thy face. For Yahweh shall command the blessing upon thee and thy storehouses, and in all that thou settest thine hand unto. But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of Yahweh thy Savior, Creator, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee, and thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all the nations, whether the Yahweh shall lead thee, and the Yahweh shall scatter thee among all people, from the one end of the earth even unto the other, and there thou shalt serve other gods, which neither thou nor thy fathers have known, even wood and stone. And among these nations shalt thou find no cave, neither shall the sole of that foot have rest, but Yahweh shall give thee there a trembling heart, and a failing of the eye, and sorrow of the mind. And thy life shall hang in the doubt before thee, and thou shalt fear day and night, and shalt have none assurance of thy life. In the morning thou shalt say, with Yahweh it were even, and at even thou shalt say, with Yahweh it were morning, for the fear of thine heart, wherewith thou shalt fear, and for the sight of thine eyes, which thou shalt see. By the spirit of the inspiration, looking far down through the ages, Moses pictured the terrible scenes of Israel's final overthrow as a nation, and the destruction of the Jerusalem by the armies of Rome. For the Yahweh shall bring a nation against thee, from far, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle fly, a nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand, a nation of the fierce countenances, which shall not regard the person of the old, nor show favor unto the young. For the utter wasting of the land and the horrible suffering of the people during the siege of Jerusalem, under Titus centuries later, were vividly portrayed. He shall eat the fruit of thy cattle, and that fruit of thy land until, and the fruit of thy land until thou be destroyed, and he shall besiege thee and all thy gates until thy high and fenced walls come down, wherein thou trespass throughout all thy land. Thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body, the flesh of thy son and of thy daughters, which Yahweh thy Yahweh hath given thee in the seed and in the straightness, wherewith thine enemies shall distress thee, for the tender and delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to sit the sole of her foot upon the ground for the delicatelessness and tenderness, her eyes shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward her children which she shall bear, for she shall eat them for want of all things secretly in the seed and straightness, wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in thy gate. Moses closed with these impressive words: I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live, that thou mayest love the Yahweh, thy Yahweh, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto him, for he is thy life and his length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which Yahweh sware unto thy fathers, unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob, to give them. Deuteronomy 30:19-20. For the more deeply to impress his truth upon all minds, the great leader embodied them in the sacred verse. This song was not only historical but prophetic, while it recounted the wonderful dealings of Yahweh with his people in the past, it also foreshadowed the great events of the future, the final victory of the faithful when Yahshua shall come the second time in power and glory. For the people were directed to commit unto memory this poetic history and to teach it unto their children and children's children. It was to be chanted by the congregation when they assemble for worship, and to be repeated by the people as they went about their daily labors. It was the duty of the parents to so impress these words upon the susceptible minds of their children that they might never be forgotten. Since the Israelites were to be, in a special sense, the guardians of the and keepers of Yahweh's law, the significance of his precepts and the importance of the obedience were especially to be impressed upon them, and through them upon their children and children's children. For Yahweh commanded concerning his statutes, thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou sittest down, or liest down, and when thou risest up, and thou shalt write them upon the post of thy house and on thy gates. When your children should ask in time to come, what means the testimony and the statutes and the judgment which the Yahweh, which the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, or Yahweh, has commanded you. Then the parents were to repeat the history of Yahweh's gracious dealings with them, how the Yahweh had wrought for their deliverance, that they might obey his law, and to declare unto them that Yahweh commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear the Yahweh, our Yahweh, for our good always, that he might preserve us alive as it is at this day. And it shall be our righteousness if we observe to do all these commandments for the Yahweh, our Yahweh, as he has commanded us. This brings the end of our study this hour, contact you at the 11th hour call.